climate change, Canada has issued a special air quality statement for Greater Montreal and is encouraging people to stay home with their windows closed if possible. Donnie Cito is a climate change researcher at Concordia. He analyzes climate data and looks at urban adaptability. Cito called the wildfire smoke a signal of larger climate problems.
It's just a signal, right? But it is one that we see, and it's all encompassing because it basically surrounds us. Instead of just waiting for these events to happen and then dealing with them, it should be an alarm to kind of say, well, you know, we really need to deal with not just the symptoms, but the causes, and really put our attention to mitigation at this point, and not just because we can always adapt. But if the baseline is gonna change every year, then the adaptations that we're going to kind of invest in now are probably not going to be relevant in the future. So unless we stop climate change from getting worse, no matter how much money we throw at it, specifically if we do kind of very moderate adaptation, it likely won't be kind of effective later on.
Jill Baumgartner is the director of McGill's Center for Climate Change and Human Health. Baumgartner stresses that health risks related to climate change are becoming a regular fact of life and encourages citizens to plan for more frequent extreme weather events.
So I think on the health side, it's important to know that, right? What does this actually mean when we're talking about health impacts of climate change? But also thinking about what you can do to protect your health, right? So one thing might be, if you're thinking about heat waves, we know that they're going to happen in the summer. So it might be a good idea to have a plan in place, right? Because if you have someone in your household who's maybe older, or maybe you have a young infant, they would be particularly vulnerable. And so it would be good to have a plan in place for that, similar for wildfires, right? If you are older, you have other pre-existing conditions, we know that they're the most impacted by those health impacts. So that's where we would like to ideally see, both public health agencies are, we see public health in Montreal, playing a big role in trying to help prepare communities for that. But individuals can also do things themselves, like have air filters or have a plan in place if it gets too hot, or, have a system in place of people around them in communities if there's a flood, right? So there's understanding those health impacts is really about preparing yourself and your family so that they can stay safe when these events happen.
For the Local Journalism Initiative, I'm Adam Innes.
I get to ride down Fancy Street, strapped up in a booster seat.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to On the Right Track. I'm DJ Zona, and today I've got a bit of a different episode for you guys. I usually play stuff that's I guess more on the hype side, but today I'm doing a really local episode. I'm really focusing on something that's happening right here in Montreal. But before I get into that, the kind of general vibe of the genre we're going to be hearing today is more of a down tempo, a little bit of trip hop, kind of ambient jazzy vibe. And this type of electronic music style, it's originated in the early 90s. Trip hop specifically is from Bristol, but everything else is very much a mix of all over the place. The sounds that really define this area of music comes from jazz, R&B, funk, dub, and soul. And these genres really combine with each other in different ways and give us a mix of a little bit of everything. It's a little more chill, it's kind of relaxed, some of it is more loungy, some of it is more hypnotic, I would say. Yeah, basically there's a lot of variety. So with me here today, I have John Lost and Félicité Couëlle-Brunet. And they're here to talk to you about, John is here gonna talk to you about his new album. and they're here to talk to you about a show that they have at White Wall Studio next Saturday. But before we get into the details of the show, I've just got a couple of questions for you guys. So if you want to say hi, say hi.
Hello, everyone.
So at first, I just want to talk a little bit about, like, the origin of your guys' art. Like, for you, John, like, the origin of your music making, how you got into it, what pulled you towards this type of music?
Dance and the body.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want to elaborate a little more on that? Like, what, how do you find that, like, the music and the body, like, how would you kind of, I guess, describe the way that they go well together?
Well, when I'm making rhythms and songs on my drum machines, I know I'm on the right page when I start to stand up out of my seat and really feel the music in my body.
Okay.
And this was a revelation for me maybe 4 or 5 years ago, because I was playing a lot of jazz music as a drummer, and so I was improvising a lot. I brought that improvisation to these different, to these electronic instruments. And what, for this record that I've released last summer and all the music going forward, it's all been about lift, about creating rhythms that have a certain tension in my body that makes me want to move. And that's the guiding light of all the music for the past while.
That's beautiful. I love that. And for you, Felice, as a projection artist, how would you say that you, like, relate your art to the music? Like, what is the relationship between the two?
I would say that, just as John answered, the movement has a very big impact on my practice, because as a video projectionist or a video artist, most of the work is on the computer most of the time. So this makes you very still. And I really appreciate, I would say, that embodied cognition that you have when you're performing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is a form of expression in itself. And there's many possibilities of showing images and using them in all sorts of ways. And to be able to connect with your movements is a very big impact. And I would say also that the music is very inspiring.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. Okay, so I definitely have more questions for you guys, but first I'm going to play the first track on the album of Train to Kansai, which is Skokie?
That's right.
If I'm correct? Okay, yeah. Yes. Great. Well, anyways, I hope you guys enjoy. This is, I'm very excited to be here.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was actually not the first track in the album, which was completely my mistake. That was Laugh Track, which I believe is the seventh track?
Possibly.
Something like that. Something like that. And something is weird here. Okay, no, everything is fine. But that was Laugh Track by John Lost. And the that's a nice little, it's very similar to the first track, right? You said this one is one of the ones that's a little more in the trip hop realm.
Mm-hmm. Tempo-wise and vibe.
Yeah. Yeah, so I just want to ask you guys a little bit about this project. Like, what is the inspiration around the music, and how do you guys like combine your two disciplines within this album, and then like of course the upcoming project of the show, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I'll talk about the album for a sec. The music.
Yeah, let's start with that.
The music, well, the album's called Train to Kansai for a reason, because in 2019, right before the pandemic, I went to Japan as a solo traveler, and I arrived in Tokyo and essentially spent the next 2 weeks in Japan saying not much of anything to anyone, because not a whole lot of Japanese speak English. There are some who do, but it was hard to meet people there. So I was listening to music and listening to a ton of Japanese music. Actually, in Tokyo, my favorite place is this place called Tower Records, and they used to be everywhere, you know, 40 years ago. But it's an 8-story record store, and on the 8th floor there's an experimental music section. And so I was on the first floor, and there was the pop stuff, and I heard some cool bands, and then I went straight to the 8th floor, and I walked straight to the back, and I heard this artist, and her name is Riza Takeda, and it was. You know, I try not to say this lightly, but music, unlike I had ever heard, as part of this scene that I later delved into of improvisers, multi-instrumentalist improvisers. So you can, at a show with Riza, you might see her play piano and sing, and there'll be a drummer, and then they'll switch. And then they both can play the other instrument equally as well.
Wow.
So that, that was very inspiring for
this
music. Yeah,
that sounds like it. Yeah. Very inspiring. And for the combining of the disciplines, talk to me a little bit about the combining of your projection art with this music.
Yeah, so for this specific one, John approached me because we've had collaborated in the past together. And I would say that it made me really, for that specific one, I was very enthusiastic about it because we've worked together before in a dance context with jams, so Essence Jams that I'm doing with my friend. And the music and the visuals were combined with dance already. So this was an immersive space that was just promising for a lot of different possibilities and just making us wonder in what space could we do it, and also who would be interested in it. So it was a big revelation for me to work with dancers and do it as a context of a jam. So then it evolved into maybe understanding how it could be maybe a little bit more normalized. So we're doing it at White Wall Studio, and White Wall Studio is a space where a lot of dancers go and just do all sorts of free movements.
So for anyone who doesn't know, when we're talking about dancers and this being like dance music, we're talking about the contemporary dance community specific in Montreal, or like
right.
There's a lot of different kinds of dance that are going on here, but this is the reason that I say that today's episode is different from what I usually talk about is because I'm normally talking about dance music in a context of like raves or concerts and electronic music in that kind of context. And so I think it's really interesting to bring in a more like professional is not the right word, but a dance that is more like it's less of a, I guess, like, it's still like a social event, like you said, the jams, but there's a more like specific context to the dance. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and in this show, John is going to be exploring his music, so it's kind of a bit more introspective about this. And it's interesting that you're bringing up all the rave culture, because, well, I mean, from what I'm understanding, a lot of people really care about this part of the rave, is to be dancing, and you want to feel safe, and sometimes it can be hard. So to have something more focused on dance can be a bit more freeing and can give a little bit more space for people to express themselves.
I completely agree. I think that's something that is really... I guess it's starting to become something that's really lacking in rave context, especially in more like commercialized events. And so I find it really beautiful that you guys are bringing this kind of music into a space for people that is specifically for the dancing. I think that's amazing.
Yeah.
But yeah, I read a little bit into, I did stalk your Instagram a little bit, Felicite, I had to say that, and I noticed that you've got a couple of posts working with like some rave collectives and like organizers in Montreal. I would love to hear a little bit more about that.
So that's how I started my video performance journey, if we could call it like that. I'm very interested into sound. I love music, and I've been inspired by it in so many different ways. And for me, it really started with that collaborative aspect. I would say that it still is the fact. It's still the main thing that inspires me, even though I do solo video projects and films and things like that. I would say that what really drives me is being able to help people make some projects come true. And I mean Montreal is great for these kind of things, for the rave culture, and you have all sorts of things going on also, different types of scenographies. We're seeing it more and more, like people are just getting more interested into it, that visual aspect, and I'm very, very happy about this because it's way more important than we think.
Completely. Okay, well, let's get right into it. So I've got the next track is Summer Days, which is not on the album, but is a little, you call it a little sneak peek. You want to talk about this song a little bit? Introduce it before I play it.
Yeah. Well, this, it's representative of the new direction of my music, which is more up-tempo. And you speak about rave culture. It's a part of my... I also love going to dance in a huge crowd of people. And so, yeah, there's some four on the floor. Let's see.
Yeah. I'm very excited. So, yeah, let's get right into it. This is CJLO 6090 AM, and you are on the right track.
Thank you. Suoni Pirillo-Popolo and Dreamscapes on CJLO present 10 Years of Metonymy Press, a cabaret, live at Casa del Popolo on Sunday, June 22nd at 8 p.m. For 10 years, Metonymy Press has been publishing queer, trans, and feminist literature by emerging writers, trying to reduce barriers for authors who interrogate the status quo to produce stunning, multi-genre books that reframe power and affirm life. This decade of Metonymy Press will be celebrated in the company of H. Felix Chow Bradley, Shanice Nicole, Kamala Mackerel, Trish Sala, Eli Tarek L. Bechelani Lynch, Kai Cheng Tom, and Jia King Wilson Yang. Don't miss out. Tickets and more information can be found on suonipirillopopolo.org, and keep listening to CGLO for more features on everything Suoni related.
I say, what are you listening to there, old chap? Man, I'm listening to the Live Wire show on CGLO 1690 on your AM dial every Saturday from 9 till 10 in the morning.
Thank you.
Okay, so that was before the ad break was the new release, Little Sneak Peek, Summer Days. And after the ad break was J10, which is from the Train to Kansai album. And we decided to play them back to back because they kind of have a similar vibe, a little more house music over here, which I also have not yet played on the show. So thank you for that.
Okay.
Yeah. And so I wanted to, in anticipation of your show next week on the 14th, you guys better not miss it. I wanted to ask you about your experience with the contemporary dance community. John, I know you're the accompanist to the contemporary dance program at Concordia. And you also, like, I've seen the video of the jam that you sent me. And yeah, tell me a bit about that and how it's been, like, working with the contemporary dance community and combining that with your music.
Oh, it's been life-changing. The community of dance in Montreal is very positive. It's full of amazing people, both students and teachers. The teachers have been are a huge influence on my music in the class context because they each have their own personality and musical demands. I can be doing something with more drum set and lower key for a teacher who likes that, who wants a soft approach. And then sometimes I and someone who's very specific musically. There's one teacher I work with and he's very specific rhythmically. He wants something simple and perfect. And then others will do 1 hour and a half straight of no specific counts or vibe. And so I will do a journey from ambient music to house in 1 hour and a half, one steady progression. So for, you know, you can imagine as an artist to be every morning showing up and having, regardless of how you feel, you have to make music for people because they've all shown up at 9 a.m. to work on their craft. So that's
and
been
like,
huge.
Because it's changing depending on who you're working with, you're kind of like, you're always kind of on the improv. You're always having to kind of figure it out on the spot, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I have to change the setup. I have to change the approach, what kind of musical inspiration I'm drawing from to fit with the teacher, because they will tell you if it's not working.
Right.
I've never had a teacher hesitate to tell me that. That's good.
Yeah, they can definitely be very particular. And so putting on this show at a dance studio, like White Wall Studio, and having it be not, like this show isn't necessarily specifically for dancers, right? So like what, like, I'm having trouble phrasing my question, but basically, what I want to ask is like, who is this show for? Like, what are, like, having it in a dance studio, but also having it be such a like open thing. Tell me more.
Well, in part, the having it there is good for Felicity. Because there's some good surfaces to project on, and I saw Felicite do a set as part of the Essence Jam session there, and it totally blew me away what you did. And so I have to admit that was part of the inspiration to go into that space but bring my music there. But the show is for everyone. I mean, the contemporary dance community and the dancers I know, and they're not just people, those dancers are not just doing contemporary dance, you know, they're coming from lots of different inspirations, just like a musician studying jazz might be into Led Zeppelin, like myself. So it's for anyone that, if you're hearing what you're hearing on the radio today, is you could get down to it, then you should come. And if that means that you dance or you lie on the floor, then what's cool about White Wall is it's a very comfortable space to do that. And they put on a huge variety of events where it seems the focus is experience the music physically in whichever way you feel comfortable.
I love that. That's really beautiful. And this is, I guess this is for both of you. What are some, like, are there other like shows that you've done in the past that you would say are like similar or that have kind of, other than the one that you just mentioned, that have inspired this collaborative project, or even local artists you've worked with, or other genres you've kind of experimented with when it comes to, yeah.
Yeah, well, I would say that the reason why I met John was because of those jams. And when we talk about jamming, it means that there's this freeing aspect of being in the center of improvisation in our practices, so whether it's like through music or dance or visual projections. I think the context that we were in made us really able to understand the possibilities and also the space, the freedom. You have way more space than you think than thinking as a performance. So I would say that I've always done improvisation, even when I perform, but I would have a different workflow usually than when it would come for the contemporary music, because it is more organic, and you can really, I would say that I really let my intuition go even harder on these ones, because it's like, I know what the mood is like. I know that it's changing all the time, and it is changing no matter what, but you know, when you have sets and when you have different, so I used to do more with electronic music and DJs, and when you have a certain DJ that wants something that's specific, you have to respect it, and there's kind of, you kind of have to work around with this. But when it comes to something where everything is important and everyone has an intention of making the space feel nice and feel a certain way, well, we kind of put the whole context above our personal practice. And there's this mutual respect that I really, really appreciate and that I'm very grateful for in those types of events where there is dance, because it kind of links everything between each other.
Yeah, and I think that, like, that's something that has been so vital to electronic music and electronic dance music, like since even the origins of raves and rave culture and dance spaces, like back in the day, you know, this idea of the artists, whether that be the DJs, the people who are like decorating the space, or in like the visual like artists as well, the projections, like all of these, the lighting, everything that goes into these kinds of shows is all about, at the end of the day, you're creating an experience, right? You're curating a certain mood for the crowd and for the people who are like experiencing your art. And I don't know, to me that's something that's so like, it's not just like vital to the community, it's so like transcendent of like all electronic dance music. Like, mm-hmm. I think that's amazing. Mm-hmm. But yeah, if you wanted to say a little bit about the something that I love to talk about on this show is like the crowd culture. Crowd culture is something that I like to at least to have to mention a little bit, because I find that like that's something that varies between the genres. So at shows that you've played, like, is there anything that you've noticed about like the crowd's culture, how people interact with each other, how people react to your art? If you have anything to say about that.
That's a good question.
I can also give you a moment to think about it, and we can listen to another song. I'm going to give you guys a minute to let that question marinate. And next up, I'm going to be playing Skokie, which is the actual first track of the Train to Kansai album. Yeah. So enjoy.
It expresses the whole thing. I don't make the phrases. I don't make the phrases. There's no difference to me, one way or another, wouldn't stall. Expresses the whole thing. The whole of what human is saying. Thank you.
the good times rolling.
Passionate about issues related to intimate partner violence? Join Women Aware's annual general meeting June 8, 2025 to learn more about how our survivor-led nonprofit has been working hard this year to address these topics from an intersectional lens. From providing tailored trainings to community-based events, we are eager to share with you the projects our community spearheaded and led this past year. A Zoom link is provided, and to join our AGM, simply sign up via our social media at womenaware.mtl or check out our website, www.womenaware.ca. Women Aware, by survivors, for survivors.
Check out Jay Nice and Lady Oracle in the Limelight every Saturday from 6 p.m. to 8 p.m. for underground hip-hop and R&B right here on CJLO 1690 AM.
Okay, welcome back. So that, I think our guests have had a little moment to think about my question. If you guys want to ask and, sorry, start, what would you like to say?
So your question was, can you just reformulate it?
I think that it was more about like how the vibes of the crowd,
right,
and like the dancers,
yeah,
and the way that you like, what you notice about the crowds,
mm-hmm,
and the way that they
okay.
react to your art,
yeah,
you know?
So as we were discussing, I would say that it definitely is about what intention you will bring when you decide to go to a space like this. And if you want to feel and the energy going through your body, well, there are many different ways of doing this. You can go in different events, but I would say that when you have more space, and when when I say more space, I'm not saying that the space has to be huge, but when the space is built for the dancers and the people enjoying the show or the experience that they're having.
More like spread out, more,
yeah,
like, I guess, open, rather than like not necessarily needing to be a big space, but not as like, I guess, like squished.
Yeah, there are so many ways to make people feel comfortable. I mean, it could be that you have a certain setup for people to sit down or to observe, to have an open space for the musicians to be on the same level as the dancers and not being like at a higher stage, for people to be accessible. I think that this is a big reflection of where we choose spaces and how we're going to have a nice workflow in those spaces. I think this is a really good question to ask yourself in comparison to like the rave in the basement where there's like no windows, and well, you'll definitely feel more squished, and that's a totally different vibe. I would say that mainly the intention of coming in there and wanting to be able to feel those things, as feel the movement, is a crucial aspect to it.
I love that. John?
Well, that's well said. Maybe to take a different perspective on it, you know, when I go out dancing myself fairly often, and what I notice makes a good crowd versus a not great crowd is that feeling of collective sensitivity, whether it's created or not. Because some crowds, it feels there's an apathetic energy, and it can take even just you know, the right collection of tall guys who are standing in the middle of the dance floor and not moving.
Yeah,
you know, the tombstones. But, you know, when you want to get from one place on the dance floor to another, and it is squished, and I'm hoping it will be on Saturday for us too, all you have to do is start moving. And actually, if you start dancing a little bit, it's the most efficient way to get from any spot on the dance floor. But those people that try to push and force themselves, they get resistance.
Yeah.
And so if that's what I'm hoping to create with Felicity on Saturday, is that on those good is the kind of crowd that welcomes a moving body into its midst.
I love that. That's so beautiful. I think that there's such a, and this is something that I think I notice in a lot of different electronic, like dance scenes, rave scenes, whatever it may be, where there becomes this obsession with getting, with being in the front or with getting close to the artist or with being like, with taking up space in a way that's kind of aggressive and that doesn't make it safe for everyone.
Yeah.
And that's like something that's been on my mind quite a bit when it comes to like issues with certain rave scenes especially. And so, yeah, it's so like there is even being like myself, I am the crowd member, right? So I notice these things where when you go to one of these events where there's like, I don't know, it's like it's such a coin toss as to whether or not you're going to end up being squished and shoved and pushed around by people, or if it's going to be more like dynamic. And sometimes you go to these shows and everyone's moving around and there's so much space and it's just so much easier to like be in it because you're not constantly stressing about, is that guy gonna elbow me in the face?
Right.
Yeah, well, for anyone who may have missed it, this show is next Saturday is June 14th at White Wall Studio. You're gonna see some, you're gonna hear some super vibey music, you're gonna see some amazing projections, and go dance. I know, John, your album is available on Bandcamp, and
that's right.
That is the album available on SoundCloud as well, or was that just the little sneak peek?
No, but you can find a couple of live sets of mine, of my newest music on SoundCloud. Yes. So if you want to see my newest newest recordings, that's where you go.
Okay, lovely. Yeah. Well, we've only got time for one more song. But before I play it, I just wanted to say thank you guys so much for being here. It's been amazing having you. It's nice to get to switch it up and get some variety in my show. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Asha.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I hope you guys enjoy this last song. Please go check out the show and go check out the music. Support local artists. Support local art, period. And this has been, you've been listening on CJLO 6090. This is On the Right Track.